Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and on this edition of the show, you'll meet Bill Carey. He's the owner of Carey Brothers Truck Repair. Bill and his family have been doing business in the city of Detroit for more than 40 years. We'll also talk to Janice Blixt. She's the artistic director for the Michigan Shakespeare Festival. The festival is taking place in Detroit this summer at Wayne State's Hilberry Gateway Theater. And this is something you do not want to miss. We'll also check in with the folks at Detroit City FC to talk about plans for their new home. A great show about what's happening in and around the D right after these messages. Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas. We kick off today's show with Bill Carey. He's the owner of Carey Brothers Truck Repair. This is a business that's been operating in Detroit since 1985. Bill, welcome into Opportunity Detroit.
Ann, thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
Tell us a little bit about how this business got started.
So, and long story short, my dad and my uncle started in 1985. They worked at a competing Detroit truck repair here in Detroit, and they decided they wanted to be entrepreneurs and go out and work for themselves. And they came to the historic Ira Wilson Dairy Building and rented what previously was the horse and buggy garage.
Wow.
Back from the early 1900s. And, you know, started the two of them and recruited their younger brother Dan into the mix. And, you know, away they went and really had a strong reputation from where they worked previously and, you know, started to bring over some customers and, you know, slowly grew into a fleet-only repair facility here and mainly just serving Detroit businesses.
Oh, that's so interesting. Now, where is the Ira Wilson Dairy Building?
So if you've ever driven the 94-96 interchange, you can't miss us. There's a big, tall smokestack out front, and typically there are 50 to 100 trucks parked out in front, right along the corner of the freeway there.
Now, when you say fleet-only business, explain to our listeners what that means, Bill.
So we pride ourselves in taking care of entrepreneurial companies, right? The majority of our core business is fleets-only. So anybody who owns 1 to 1,000 trucks. And we really take a lot of pride in being a bumper-to-bumper, roof-to-tires company so that we are one throat to choke for, you know, small businesses that don't have the time or energy to really focus on everything on their moving assets, and they need to be focused on, you know, what makes them money and how they operate. So the majority of our customers, we do every single thing they need done to their entire fleet. We do maintenance programs and we manage the maintenance of the vehicles. We communicate with the drivers. You know, we're really part of, you know, their organization. And over the last 40 plus years, we've built a great reputation to be, you know, honest and transparent and trustworthy to be able to handle, you know, a lot of their assets and a lot of their expenses, right?
Bill, go way back and explain how the family even got interested in learning how to repair trucks. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we, my dad's family grew up in Dearborn.
Okay.
And Divine Child was around the corner. And my grandfather said he'll pay for the girls to go to Divine Child, but the boys are on their own. So they had to work. They had to find a job to work through paying their own tuition. And, you know, my dad started driving a tow truck at age 16. And, you know, his older brother had a job at Muscat Tire, which is where they worked. And they learned how to fix trucks. And they were, you know, motorheads and working on cars. And really, they focused on trucks and never left the business, right?
Sure. I would imagine, Bill, that fixing trucks 40 years ago was a lot different than it is today with everything being computerized and all this high-tech stuff going into cars and trucks.
Oh, it's astonishing, right? You used to be able to diagnose trucks by listening to them or feeling them and manual gauges and ways of doing things. And now, you know, there's thousands of sensors and computer chips on every vehicle, and it's required us to really spend a lot of time, energy, and money in evolving to have all of the state-of-the-art softwares and sending guys for training and really hiring guys with specific trainings that we didn't have as an organization. Has helped us, you know, grow and develop more people.
The other part of this story that is so interesting to me is that you've been doing business in the city for more than 40 years, and oh my, you have seen a lot of change. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I'm 39 years old, and coming down here as a child, you know, the neighborhood had houses everywhere, right?
Sure.
And there was a lot of crime, and we would get broken into all the time. And since then, just even looking at the change in the neighborhood, right? I remember being a kid and the ice cream truck showing up, coming down the street, and my dad would tell me to get on my bike and ride up and down the streets and tell all the kids to come get an ice cream on him, you know. And it's really, really changed, you know, the outlook of the neighborhood, because most of the houses are gone on our street. There's only one house left. So to see the change in that has been crazy. And the change in Detroit, you know, a majority of our growth has been growing with our customers. And, you know, our customers that previously back in the 90s had 10 trucks now have 100, right? And, you know, it's been great to see, and it's been great to be a part of. You know, we pride ourselves on helping our customers grow.
So you guys are entrepreneurs, obviously. What have been the highs, first of all, and then we can talk a little bit about the lows of running a business in the city of Detroit, Bill Carey?
So the highs are really, you know, our core values are family, right? Like family and growth, and being able to provide an opportunity for a lot of young people to come in with very little experience in our space and teach them how to make a really good living. So like we have, you know, great parties, and we have a really solid culture that we focus on here. But, you know, when I hear a guy just bought a house or had a baby and got married and took a great vacation or bought a new car, it's like, those are why we come in every day to see our people grow, right? We've got just over 100 employees now.
Wow.
And a lot of them have been with us for a very long time.
What about the challenges? What would you say have been some of the biggest challenges along the way that you faced and you survived?
Technicians are very, very hard to come by.
Okay.
And, you know, we really for a long time had to tell people we can't service them, right? We would have customers that would be great customers come and say, hey, you know, I got a recommendation from, you know, one of your other customers. You guys do a great job. We want to bring you our trucks. And it would kill me to have to say over and over again, I'm so sorry, I can't bring you in. We're at capacity, and we have all these customers that we've taken care of for so long that I can't tell them I couldn't fix their truck because I have yours here. And that was really challenging because we were limited on space, and we were limited by the amount of technicians we had. So we really spent a lot of energy expanding inside of the building we were in and getting really creative, because as you can imagine, a horse and buggy garage is not designed for a 14-foot truck. So we've had to do a lot of capital improvements and, you know, keep developing the space and hiring and training technicians. So we spent a lot of time and energy training people to do it our way.
And we're talking to Bill Carey. He's the owner of Carey Brothers Truck Repair. Bill, do you have opportunities for people that might be interested in doing this kind of work right now?
Oh, man, come one, come all, right? if you could fit our culture and, you know, have integrity and are reliable, We will take any and all people and, and train them to do a job and build a trade and develop some really great skills and make some really good friends along the way.
Oh, that's good to know. And how would people get in touch with you, Bill?
On our website, carrybros.com, there is a request more information link, and you can say you're looking for your truck to get fixed, or you want a job, or you want to get information for when we host a barbecue and come get a free hamburger and hot dog.
I love it. What kind of advice, finally, do you have for entrepreneurs that might be interested in getting into a business in the city of Detroit, Bill?
Do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. That is kind of our lifeline here. And you're going to get knocked down over and over and over again, and be very, very resilient to keep fighting along.
Bill Carey, owner of Carey Brothers Truck Repair, it was nice to meet you. Thank you for your time today.
Oh, Anna, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, the Michigan Shakespeare Festival returns to the city. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. We now say hello to Janice Blixt. She is the artistic director for the Michigan Shakespeare Festival. And Janice, welcome into Opportunity Detroit.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your having me.
Janice, great story today for Opportunity Detroit, because you now have moved to Detroit. Tell us all about this.
Well, we're a 30-year-old professional equity theater festival, and over the past few years, we've kind of been moving east as different things have happened after COVID and all of that. And we got an opportunity. We were contacted by Wayne State University because they built this beautiful new Hilberry Gateway Theater, and it was open for summer. And so they called us and said, would you like to be in residence in summer? Because what you do is rotating classical rep, and that's what the Hilberry was once known for, and we'd love to have you in residence. And we said, yes, absolutely. So we are smack dab in the middle of Midtown. We are just a few blocks away from the DIA. We are surrounded by restaurants and other arts organizations. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful fit for us.
And this is the opening weekend. Tell us what we can expect when we come to the Michigan Shakespeare Festival this weekend.
Well, we are going to run through August 8th. So
that's
come
great.
And see us at any point before then. But we are in rotating rep, and we have three productions this year. The first is Richard III, which is starring Detroit comedian and wonderful guy Rico Bruce Wade as Richard III. And yes, it is a dark tragedy history play, but it's also honestly very funny. And we're describing it as medieval Tarantino. It's just got a lot of dark humor, and he's a charming villain who kind of takes the audience with him for a while, and then he just gets so bad that the audience can't go with him anymore, and then it's just fun to watch him get his comeuppance. So that is the first show in our season. Our second show is the original rom-com, Much Ado About Nothing, and we're doing that in a beautiful Jane Austen garden kind of feel, and it is funny and bright, and it's just all about love and finding one another. And then the final show of our season is a brand new adaptation of George Farquhar's The Beaux' Stratagem by Robert Kozlarik, who's a longtime director and adapter with us. And Beaux' Stratagem is a 1707 later restoration comedy, and it is swashbuckling, funny, silly, goofy. It's two young guys who are from London, and they're broke, and they decide to go out to a small town to try and find rich wives. And it's just a silly, funny show.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. So how does this work, Janice, the shows? Are they during the day? Are they at night? Are they a couple times a day? Explain to our audience what they can expect with regard to how to get tickets, things like that.
Absolutely. You can get tickets by going to our website, which is www.michiganshakespearefestival.com, And you can go to the ticket link or you can go to the calendar link and choose your tickets that way. And it takes you to the box office of the Gateway. So we've tried to make that as streamlined and simple as possible. We have performances on Wednesday afternoon, Thursday nights, Friday nights, two shows on Saturday, and a matinee on Sunday. And if you come for a weekend, you can see all three shows because we are in rotating rep, which means it's a different show every performance.
Oh, so, that's fantastic.
Yeah, like you can see a show Friday night and then you can see the other two shows on Saturday, or you can see two shows on Saturday and then the other show on Sunday. Or one a week. Absolutely, you can see them all. And it's a lot of fun because it's the same acting company and we've got mostly the same designers for all three shows, but all three shows are completely different.
Janice, as the artistic director for the Michigan Shakespeare Festival, talk to us a little bit about how great that is that you are now here in the city of Detroit. There's a lot of opportunity doing it here at Wayne State's Hilberry Gateway Theater.
It is absolutely wonderful for us. Like I said, we are a professional company, and before we were, you know, kind of in mid-Michigan, and so the pool of artists, while absolutely terrific, it meant we were having to bring in a lot of people. Now that we're in Detroit, we have a lot of Detroit actors that you might recognize from shows at the Rep or at Detroit Public or any of those wonderful theaters that we have here in Detroit. So there's that, which is terrific for us in terms of the talent pool is just wonderful. But we're also a regional theater. So we have a couple of actors from New York. We've got a couple from Chicago. We've got a couple from other places around Michigan. All of that is just wonderful for us. But also, because we're in Midtown, we are suddenly in a place where you can go and get a great dinner and come see a show, or spend the afternoon at the DIA and come see a show, or, you know, drop off half of your group to go see a Tigers game and the rest of you come see a show.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, we absolutely are thrilled to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Janice. You are the artistic director. How long have you been involved with the Michigan Shakespeare Festival?
Well, interestingly enough, I was an actor at the Hilberry. And I'm actually from Chicago, but I was an actor at the Hilberry. I got my MFA there. I did 3 years there and left in 1997. And one of the first professional jobs that I had coming out of there was as an actor for the Michigan Shakespeare Festival. So I acted for a couple of years. I met my husband there. We were playing Kate and Petruchio in The Taming of the Shrew. And then we got married, and then in 2010, they did a national search to try and find a new artistic director because the original founding artistic director, John Neville Andrews, was retiring, and I came in at that point. And so this is a weird kind of convergence of many parts of my life coming back together. I'm the artistic director. I direct two shows a year. This has been my life since 2010, and I'm back at I'm back in Detroit. I'm back at the Hilberry. It's kind of amazing for me.
Yeah, it's a great story.
So yeah, it's really, it's exciting. And there are people that I know and people that I love from around here. And I'm just so happy to be here again.
Talk about Shakespeare. Some people absolutely love it. Other people, I think, are kind of like, eh, I'm not sure. I don't get it. Talk a little bit about your love of it and why you love it so much, Janice.
I honestly came up in musical theater.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't until I was in grad school at the Hilberry, and I was working with people from Stratford and some of these amazing Shakespearean actors, that I suddenly started realizing, oh, it's all of that, like, ninth grade reading Romeo and Juliet and not really caring that much about Shakespeare. It was because I wasn't clicking into it as a play. I was clicking into it before that as good for you theater. It was like the broccoli of theater. And now, you know, as an adult, I love broccoli, but I absolutely love the language, the poetry, the characters, the fun of Shakespeare. When we talk about Shakespeare, oftentimes we have in our head that, oh, it's this dark tragedy, or it's this language that I don't understand because it's full of these and thous and all of that. But when it's actually played on stage, you suddenly get, oh, no, this is just people. This is people who are fighting for their honor, or they're fighting for their love, or they're trying desperately to be understood, get what they deserve. And when you put it like that and suddenly you start seeing it alive and with these characters, it becomes something that connects with modern audiences. There's a reason we're doing these plays 400 years later, and it's because in so many ways, people really haven't changed all that much. Hmm. We still want to be loved. We still want to make a connection. We still want to be who we are and not be judged for it. And that is what Shakespeare is about. It's what these characters are about. I love the fact that we've been in previews, so audiences have been sticking around afterwards and have been telling me their thoughts on the shows. And what I keep hearing from people who don't see a lot of Shakespeare is they start out by saying, I wasn't sure I wanted to come tonight, but this was so much fun, or this was so cool, or I can't believe I understood this. And I kind of love that. And I feel like, yeah, well, when it's done by good people who know what they're doing, and when it is produced with love and with respect for the language and the themes and the drama of it, it becomes just alive. I mean, people don't always understand this, but Game of Thrones was based on the Wars of the Roses.
Really?
Which is what Richard III is part of.
Oh, that's interesting. I never knew that.
Oh, yeah. So all of that, like, trying to get onto the throne and the families warring with each other and who's the York and who's the Lancaster, all of that is where he got all of his ideas for the Game of Thrones series.
Oh, that's fascinating. You know, the other thing I think that is really important is you talk about the talent pool, and you say a lot of the talent comes from right here in Detroit, Metro Detroit. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of appeal for people because they're going to know a lot of these actors and actresses and say, you know what, I got to see this.
I love that. We have, again, as he's in a lot of the shows, he's the dad, Leonardo, the sweet dad in Much Ado, and he's the evil Richard III, and that's Rico Bruce Wade, who people may have seen. He was actually Second City Detroit for a long time, and he has been recently up at Flint and all of, and with us for the past few years, which has been great. But you're also going to see Danae Lassan, who is an amazing actress, and she's playing Queen Elizabeth, Richard's foil, basically, in Richard III. And she's been in a lot of productions recently at Detroit Public. You're also going to see Joey Taylor, who has been making a splash the past couple of years as part of the graduate company at the Hillbury. And he's playing Dogberry and one of the two guys looking for a wife in The Beau Stratagem. I think we have some people that will be recognized and you will really enjoy seeing. Will Bryson, who has been all over town, and I know he got his Shakespeare training at the Shakespeare Center in D.C., and now he's local Detroit. He's in it. And Dwayne Shabazz. It's such a great group of local artists that are also, you know, supported by and connecting with and kind of, you know, getting, working with some people with some new rhythms, because we've got Allie Babich from New York in, and we've got Jeremy Lee Thompson in from Chicago. So it's just a great mix. And by the way, we have two young performers, Addie and Alex Huff, and they are killing it in their kid roles as like the princes, and they're the watching Much Ado. It's a really lovely ensemble of artists that kind of go across these three different shows, and they're playing oftentimes wildly divergent characters from performance to performance. It's one of the things that people who come and see a lot of our shows end up saying, I cannot believe that actor, I came back to the next show and he was that mean, evil guy. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun that way.
Janice Blix, Artistic Director for the Michigan Shakespeare Festival. It sounds like a wonderful way to spend an afternoon or evening during the summer in Detroit. So thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me, Anne.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, we've got soccer on our minds, so we thought it would be a good idea to check in with the folks from our own Detroit soccer team. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. We now say hello to Alex Wright. He's the co-founder and chief marketing officer for Detroit City FC. And Alex, I thought this would be a perfect time to check in with you because, wow, everyone has soccer on the mind.
That's exactly how I would put it as well. with the World Cup going strong and the weather heating up, I know on the DCFC side of things, we've got a women's team that just finished up. We've got a men's team that's mid-season, and we've got a ton of announcements and fun activities going on all summer long. It feels like one of those times where soccer is on everyone's mind, regardless of if they played, if their family played, or if they're just casual.
This has to be really good for you, for the Detroit City FC, right?
Yeah, I mean, our goal has always been to be Detroit's soccer team, and we've been hard at work for that for well over a decade, and some years it's harder than others, but this is one of those years where it just sort of, it's just in the air, right? Like, we are always soccer first. We're building a club. We're building a stadium. But more so than ever, you find yourselves in conversations at the, you know, the grocery store or out in the park, and folks are talking about the U.S. team or the Mexican team or this upset or that upset. And it's really fun to be able to join the conversation with the DCFC story behind it.
It's really interesting to me how many people are into this. I recently traveled to New York City for a conference, and so I would talk to our drivers from the airport, and I asked every driver, okay, are you paying attention to soccer? And what teams do you think are going to win it all? And every single person that I talked to had an opinion. They were paying attention, and they seemed to, you know, at least think they had an idea who was going to win it all. But that's fascinating to me.
Well, I think one thing that even that every sports fan can understand, regardless of how deep your soccer knowledge is passion.
Right.
Right. And one thing that's really caught fire is all these different nationality groups that are in different cities across North America, and you know, the Algerians being adopted by Lawrence, Kansas, and the Scottish fans in Boston. And it's just such a cool human story that really underlines how sport has this power to bring people together, to transcend boundaries and barriers, and really become this thing that just is a sort of a way of making memories that bring us all together. And how can anyone, whether you're involved in it or on the sidelines, not be attracted to that?
And the soccer fans that have come here from other countries, they seem to really like it here in the United States, and they especially like our food and our culture.
Yeah, well, one of the most interesting things about soccer culture around the globe is that it is probably the one of the most creative types of fandom that you can see. You know, it brings not only about each country has their own local flair of support, but it's almost like, I guess in the U.S. you would compare it to like college athletics in the way that each group tries to kind of one-up the other in terms of creativity and expression and kind of razzing each other all in fun. It creates this bond that even if you're not on top, you know, you can show off in other ways that makes yourself memorable.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So how about the men's team? How's the men's team doing here in Detroit this year, Alex Wright?
Well, the men's side has picked a great year to be excellent. where we've been at the top of our table pretty much all season long, currently fighting hard for second place. And the top four teams in our conference host a playoff game, which is one of our organizational goals, is to host the playoffs at Keyworth Stadium where we play, which is the most electrifying place to see a soccer match outside of a U.S. national game with a full house in a 70,000-seat stadium. We bring that level of passion and energy and just fun to Detroit. So the team's doing great. We've got some great stars. We're scoring goals, and our supporters have continued to establish themselves as just another reason to check out the match. You know, the team's winning. And then in every quiet moment, there isn't one because the fans are going nuts even when the ball's not going in the goal.
Yeah, it's so interesting because your fans, they are really loyal. I mean, they follow Detroit City FC very closely, and they get to the stadium all the time.
Detroit City FC was founded on the concept that people care a lot about sports in this town, and they just want a organization that understands that, that gives them the space to be themselves, but also creates an inclusive space for everyone. And I think it's as much a passion for the game as it is a gratitude for that kind of environment that really fires people up. You know, it creates a sense of ownership, again, that like maybe the non-soccer experts could associate with a college athletics, you know, something that it means more than just the game because it's a piece of your life that you're nostalgic for, but also it feels like you can be a part of. And that's how our matches are. The team, of course, controls the wins and losses, but it's the fan base. And it's not just the supporters that are chanting and dancing and screaming on the sideline. We're seeing more and more families every single year. Soccer is a massive growth sport. We've known this for generations, but in the Detroit area, especially the city of Detroit, is a sport that is still has a lot of room to grow. And we're doing everything we can on our side at Detroit City FC to recruit young Detroiters, to create spaces where there is no financial or transportation barriers to get these kids involved. Because what we know about growing the game is that you love a sport because your folks or your grandfolks took you to the game or you grew up playing it. And we're doing everything we can to be on the cusp of those first couple generations to build an entire community of soccer fans based on these collective experiences.
You know, as I listen to you talk, Alex Wright, co-founder and chief marketing officer for Detroit City FC, it sounds to me like it's almost like you're creating specifically and purposefully a special connection to community. And that's what it's all about. A little bit different than maybe some other sports.
Yeah, I think that we are, those of us who founded the club and have been here since day one, I think we're inspired by being from one of the biggest sports towns in America, but also we're all kids that grew up following all the favorite pro teams in town.
Sure,
and
right.
Not only loving those experiences, but thinking about what would we do? And we wanted to build something that's founded on promoting not only the sport, but the city and the neighborhoods we live in. We're all Detroiters, and I'm born and raised in the city. And it's important to us to share not only an accessible and affordable vision of the game, but making sure that like we're reaching out to folks who it doesn't come easy to get to games, right? And so
sure.
Those are all things that are important to us as individuals that we kind of combine with our passion for sports and try to build a different kind of team. Because the reality is we're in the professional sports space in this town, and there's going to be four teams that are doing it pretty darn good before
Absolutely.
They even take a look
That's
at DCFC.
Right.
So not only do we have to be professional, we have to be different.
Yeah.
And the way we choose to be different is to try to be as grassroots and committed to community as possible.
Let's turn now to Alumnify Field.
Yeah, Alumnify Field, the stadium that we announced, gosh, now maybe 18 months ago, that was coming to the space between Corktown and Southwest Detroit, down on Michigan Avenue and 20th. The old Southwest Hospital was recently demolished, and now it's a fertile field that we're about to see start elevating our new stadium that's going to be the forever home of Detroit City FC, and we could not be more excited about it.
You've announced the opening of a preview center at the Mercado in Mexican Town. What exactly is that, Alex?
Yeah, so the stadium itself, when it's finished, and we're slated to begin the season in 2028, kicking a ball in the stadium, is going to have a capacity of 15,000. At this point already, through our season ticket holders and deposit holders, we've already locked in about 6,000 seats have been spoken for. So at this stage in the development, what it calls for is a preview center that gives those folks, plus opens the doors to others who are curious and interested, to put down a deposit, schedule some time, and they can get a tour from our ticketing staff to take a look at what kind of options we have, whether that's in seating or premium spaces available. One of the biggest changes from going from Keywords Stadium to this new Alumnify Field isn't so much going to be the price changes, it's going to be the range of options. We're still going to be committed to being the most affordable experience on the professional level in our town, but we're also going to make sure that there are the spaces available for those who are interested in the suite experience or premium spaces. Those are things that we've never really been able to offer in Key Worth, and we're committed to building out a space that is a space truly for everyone. And part of that is going to be filling that stadium with a whole bunch of people that are looking for a whole bunch of different kinds of experiences.
It sounds to me like it's going to be a state-of-the-art stadium, kind of like a travel destination for soccer fans.
100%. We are as lifelong Detroiters, but we're also like students of sports history, and we love the old European soccer vibe of intimate spaces that really kind of reverberate when the crowd is at its most intense. And that's the kind of space we want to build. So we want to make something that's easy to be a fan at, it's easy to park at, it's easy to access, it's affordable, that's got great sight lines, it's focused on the game, it makes a place where memories can be made, but also that it offers a lot of the modern amenities that our current space, frankly, doesn't offer. Key Worth Stadium is one of the most special places to see a sporting event, really, in America, and I encourage anyone in the next 18 months to come check it out. But it certainly is not the easiest spot to watch a game. It's nestled in a neighborhood in Hamtramck. Parking can be a bit of a pickle. It's not on everyone's radar, right? Whereas most of the other stadiums in town are right downtown. You can't miss them.
Sure.
So we're gonna maintain that kind of gritty Detroit vibe that we have at our current space, but also just make it a bit easier to be a fan of DCFC. And I think that's how we grow, and that's how we stay Detroit soccer team.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. How can people get tickets to get to Key Worth Stadium this season? It sounds like a great event for a family.
Well, the easiest thing to do is to go online to, or just Google Detroit City FC, but our website is detcityfc.com. And there you can find ticketing information, our schedule. We also have a women's team that just finished up, but those were awesome games for, I've got two daughters myself, and they love checking out the women's team, which featured so many local stars, whereas our men's team is a bit more of an international flair. And that's a really cool experience too. But you can go on our website and find ticket options for the next game. We've got two games in the second half of July for those of you with World Cup hangovers once those games are over and you're still fiending for some soccer, that's available. And then as a companion website to cityfc.com, you can simply Google Alumni 5 Field, where at alumni5field.com there's info about the stadium, about the preview center that we mentioned earlier, and opportunities to learn more about what that's going to look like, how the development's coming along, and most importantly, where you can put a deposit to make sure folks can secure their space in this new stadium.
Alex Wright, co-founder and chief marketing officer for Detroit City FC. It was really nice to talk to you today about all things soccer.
Likewise, and hope to see you down at Key Worth Stadium this summer.
Absolutely. Sounds like a lot of fun. I'm Ann Thomas. Thank you for listening to Opportunity Detroit, and enjoy the rest of your day.